Teresa Rebeck grew up in Cincinnati. She's done a lot since graduating from Ursuline Academy. She was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for Drama for Omnium Gatherum back in 2001. She's written 20 plays in total, including Dead Accounts, a play about families and felonies, as it was called. It was commissioned and premiered by the Cincinnati Playhouse back in 2012. She spent a lot of time in the world of series television, from L.A. Law, NYPD Blue, and Law & Order Criminal Intent to two seasons of Smash in 2012 and 2013, about the birthing of a Broadway show. She knows her way around words, that's for sure, and she's managed to crank out several novels along the way, most recently, I'm Glad About You, which she's on tour to promote, including a stop back here in hometown Cincinnati. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So, quick setup for the story of the novel. Can you just sort of tell us quickly what it's about?
Yeah, it's about two people who fall in love very young in Cincinnati, and they've split by the time the novel starts for various reasons, mostly that the dreams that they both have are incompatible, and there's a kind of cultural incompatibility to what they yearn for themselves. She wants to be an actor, and he wants to be a doctor without borders. So they separate and follow their paths, and disappointment and challenges follow them both. It's actually a very funny novel in a lot of ways, but as she becomes more and more a creature of the culture as an actress, he becomes more and more internal. He stays in Cincinnati. He ends up with a local practice and marries someone else. And they encounter each other through their journeys and stand in judgment of each other for having given up both each other and their dreams.
The story is also an opportunity then to look at the divergent cultures in which they find themselves. They come from Cincinnati, although they're rather different even here.
Yes.
And then she goes off to New York, struggles with an acting career, and then he's still back here in town. She comes back, they cross paths. But you have lots of opportunity to talk about details of Cincinnati and what life is like here and in the world of showbiz.
Yeah, it's full of love of both the East Coast and the Midwest. When I started writing it, that was very much on my mind, was the way, how difficult it is for America to talk to each other right now. You know, that the culture of the Midwest seems to have embraced a kind of moral superiority to the East Coast and people on the East Coast. It's an intellectual superiority, my husband said, but in New York, people think intellectual superiority is moral superiority. And I found that Allison, that I could use my own experience, like standing at the hinge of those two cultures, to inform the complications of her perceptions of herself and of her past, and also Kyle's perception of her and of her choices.
What inspired you specifically to write the story? I mean, did you, you said some of this is hinged on your own experience and that sort of thing, but was there some moment that you thought, oh, this is how I want to put this together?
You know, people ask that question. It's a very challenging question to answer. It's always a different version of the same question, which is, where does it come from? And, you know, honestly, nobody knows where it comes from. I do know things that were plaguing me that I had spent a lot of time thinking about, which was this peculiar, painful discussion that I had so many times with people in the East Coast who seemed to look down on the Midwest. And then I'd come here and have people who I love and who I, you know, were so much part of my life for so long looking down on, they don't even quite seem to know what I am anymore, because it's all informed by you went to the East Coast, you are no longer one of us. You know, I was sort of at a place in my life where that became a more and more painful awareness. And so I started thinking about the split self. You know, I have a lot of classical training in literature, and I was thinking about Theodore Dreiser and Sister Carrie, and how that young woman who is sort of very, very naive in a 19th century way gets tossed further and further up into the culture where she becomes more and more commodified. And I had seen so much of that myself in the work that I was doing in show business, that that part of the story seemed very potent and new to me, while also having this kind of a very American root. And I also, you know, I was raised Catholic, and I know so many really good Catholics, and had lived through the terrible shock and disappointment of what happened with the church And I ended up, you know, I'm not a practicing Catholic, but I have some great people in my lives who are very dedicated and theological and deeply religious people. And I became fascinated by that as a kind of expression of interiority, because I felt like what was going on with these two characters is that they become the split self, you know, that there's something unlikely about them, but they do not do well without each other. And I think that that was what it looked like for me. It was that he became all interiority and she became all object, and neither one of them were comfortable.
And, yeah, with that evolution, yeah, that they've gone through. These characters that you've created, I found to be really smartly drawn in my reading of this. And you've put very real words in their mouths. They really sound like people that we could know. You've written so many plays. I wonder if writing dialogue in your novel, how similar that is to writing dialogue in play.
It is so delightful for me to find a moment where I can just let everybody talk, because it's very natural to me. It's what I spent so many years of my life sort of finding characters and then following them around and letting them talk to each other, which is essentially what a playwright does. At least it's what this playwright does. So it's very comfortable territory for me when I find a place where I can just let them all speak to each other. But I'm very compelled by narrative voice now. That was a big complicating factor for me on this novel, because I thought, I know this has to be a third-person narrator. I have to figure out what that narrative voice is.
So in a novel, you really have more opportunity to narrate and describe than you do in a play. In a play, it has to come out through dialogue or whatever. Did you have to adjust your thought processes to be able to do those descriptive kinds of things? I mean, it seems like you sort of revel in the parts, especially it seemed to me about Cincinnati, because, well, maybe it's because, well, I live in Cincinnati, but it was fun to read those because you could describe it in ways that both have your insider perspective and some distance.
Yes, certainly I did enjoy that, partially because I loved Allison's love of Cincinnati and Cincinnati culture. She doesn't love everything about it. She's got a kind of gimlet eye on pretty much everything she faces. But there's a kind of respect for it that I enjoyed imbuing the detail with. It was very difficult for me to figure out how to handle a third-person narrator, because I have a PhD in Victorian literature, and the novels that I studied were like the greatest novels ever, you know, like Middlemarch and Anachronism. You know, like you go, well, how can you stand up if those are your models? But I went through a period of reading a lot of Trollope and a lot of E.M. Forster, and I ended up feeling like their grasp of a kind of buoyant joy and sardonic eye on the lightness and the darkness that is a human society really served my voice.
Can you shed a little light for our listeners on the title of your novel? How does that relate to the story? So the title is I'm Glad About You.
Yes. There's a moment in the book when Kyle and Allison are discussing their dreams for the future. One of the dreams is working at the Navajo Nation. And this is even in the past of the book. And they start to study the Navajo language. And as it turns out, the Navajo don't have really concepts of possession in their language, because they don't believe that human beings possess the earth. They don't have a word for love, technically, because love has too much possession in it. The assumption is that there's a kind of possessive quality in the Navajo language. The way they say I love you is I'm glad about you. That's as close as they can get. And I found that a very beautiful idea about love and about where we need to go with each other. Certainly where they need to go with each other, because it's kind of bloody what they do to each other.
Yes. So I'm wondering, as you hopscotch through your writing career, what you're doing next? Another novel, another play, more TV? Where are you with things?
You know, I'm actually sort of easing into another novel. I've started directing in the theater, so that's always sort of hovering as like something that appears and then goes away. I'll be directing a play this summer. It looks like I'm directing. This is always something where you have to be very cautious.
Yes.
But I've written a screenplay, and it looks like I'm directing that this spring. But that's with a lot of knocking on wood.
To be determined.
Yeah.
Well, for more information about Teresa Rebeck and her new novel, follow the link that you'll find at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I've been talking with writer and Cincinnati native Teresa Rebeck about I'm Glad About You. Thanks for coming by for this conversation.
Thank you.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.